In his presentation, Dr. Rachman will discuss some of the clinical decision support-based initiatives at Alliance that could serve as a model for use of CDS in prevention and healthcare. So with that, Dr. Fred Rachman.
Thanks, Nath. So the bad news is I put so many slides in here that I have about 10 seconds a slide. The good news is that many of them were context setting that I counted on Seth doing so well, so I can breeze by them pretty quickly. So just one more thing about the context in which we are. The rate of EMR adoption is staggering. This is a CDC surveillance data on the use of EMR. So the topic is very timely, and it's important that we contemplate rethinking all of the ways that we deal with public health data in this context of how information is being collected at point of care. How many of you, I just need to know a little bit about the audience, how many of you are old enough to have been in the consumer market when this device came on the market? Okay, and of you raising your hands, so keep your hands up, how many of you carried one? Okay, so there are a few of you. You are the early adopters, and I'd pitch to you, this is kind of where we are in EMR. And if those of us had not carried this phone to begin with, you wouldn't have this device. How many of you carry something that looks like this? All of you, right? So I'm going to try to recruit all of you into that early adopter space and realize that dealing with the clunky sometimes is what is required to make progress. So here's where we really are in meaningful use. The program that has really spurred that adoption of EMRs, and really the first stage was just to get people to put these EMRs in and then to use some of the functionality that we hope will achieve the goals, which include increasing quality at point of care as well as at public health levels. So one of the key features, one of these advanced processes that we're really counting on, as Seth outlined, is clinical decision support. And clinical decision support actually has two aspects, and I chose these two definitions because they are really actually complementary. One is it's a set of technologies that are used to prompt right decision-making at any point of care, and the second is it's a process that wraps around that. And no technology, as you know, is effective without having the proper process. So the experiments I'm going to be describing to you are carried out at a set of early adopters. We support a centrally hosted HIT platform that spans 34 independent safety net organizations, uniform data capture methods, uniform technology tools embedded that are based on a uniformly accepted set of clinical standards. So this is an example of clinical decision support, just really quickly. This is a screen that an end user would see that summarizes for them a particular practice guideline that has been dissected into its information component parts. There is a way that in real life, in real time, the patient's up-to-the-minute current status with regard to those elements would be reflected for the clinician. There would be an opportunity for them to address that right there at that point in the use of the clinical information system and some kind of visual cue to prompt where we are with regard to that clinical standard. So I'm a pediatrician. I know this is an SCD conference, but I wanted to just share with you how powerful this could be with a sort of in a different context. So this is a blood pressure nomogram, which in the old days or even in the early EMR days or the actually still common EMR days, one would have to take that blood pressure measurement, go to this complicated chart, figure out the age, the body measurements of the child to figure out is this a normal blood pressure or not. And similarly, just dealing with a BMI, which we collect height and weight at every visit, but to calculate a BMI, one had to consult a chart like this, figure out where it was, and you can imagine how often in a 10-minute visit that information was processed accurately. So in the age of the EMR, here's how it looks, where this is all electronically coded, and we now have an immediate prompt, color prompt to the provider that this child is obese. And furthermore, if the provider doesn't decide to accept the machine, there's a way to go out and see the reference point. And easy way for that to be clinically acted upon. Similarly, for obesity, for blood pressure, same thing. I'm going to go quickly here. So how does that actually impact care? This is coming from our data warehouse, which is actually refreshed daily, and we're moving to every 15 minutes. So this is current data that can be tracked. And when that gets aggregated, we can see the impact of introducing a tool like that in terms of driving the ability for clinicians to appropriately deal with obesity in children. So let's move to the topic of the day, STD. So I'm going to describe to you a project that we're in the midst of to apply these same tools to chlamydia. These are being carried out at two of our sites. One, gratitude to our LGBT center, Howard Brown, that's involved in our midst, because they are really pioneers and leaders in setting standards for how we deal with sexual histories and all aspects of sexual health. And paired with another of our large health centers that has a more general population. So this is a chlamydia tool. It's hard to see. Excuse me. So this is a chlamydia tool. This is the success, as we've built it out. This is a sexual health assessment form, and you can see that it highlights for the provider what the most current risk assessment was and alerts them to the appropriately to the age and characteristics of the patient. And then there is the ability to repeat that assessment at interval as necessary, to do patient education, and the ability to then within that screen take the appropriate action. The simpler element is also included and pops up at various points within the visit that is much more specific to the chlamydia screening recommendation, and that will alert the provider based on patient's age and previous screening results that a chlamydia test is due, and again, ability to order it there. And finally, this is a very, very comprehensive risk assessment tool that was designed by our colleagues at Howard Brown. And this is where we're really hoping we can get much more granular risk data that will help us better understand the risk patterns and its association with chlamydia incidence amongst our populations. And an important feature in the design of this screen is that there is an ability to collect this information within the EMR, populate the database, but suppress the text in the clinical note. And this we found from conversations both with providers and patients that there might be willingness to have an interview like this, but people did not want that level of detail of sexual activity reflected in their notes. So as we're going, we're using the warehouse infrastructure to collect baseline data to understand the use of the CDS tool. But as we know from previous experience with tools, we're still dealing with that clunky iPhone. And part of the problem of these tools is generally they're designed with people thinking very narrowly that they need to be used by the clinician in the exam room, a very narrow window of time to be used. So we have embraced the five rights of clinical decision support. Those of you not familiar with it, you Google it. And it's really just a very simplistic framework to think that clinical decision support should be thought of more broadly. It's not only through an EMR, it's through other channels. It's not only for the provider, it's for the expanded number of members of the care team, including, by I would say, the patient. And it should be positioned at the right time in the visit. So part of, I mentioned, it's both technology and workflow. So the work of now, once the tool is designed, is in an iterative process, refine it by mapping it to various processes in the workflow. And I won't go through this, but this slide showed before and after working with clinic sites how the tool gets inserted, how it gets embedded at what points in the workflow with the patient. So I just want to, again, this is a public health conference. What are these numbers? Well, if you consider that a patient would come to a health center four times a year and spend about an hour, even if they thought they had an hour of valuable time during that visit, which is questionable, that would represent only 0.046% of their life. So obviously, if we want to use these powerful tools, we need to be thinking more broadly about how to position them across the public health spectrum. And information, I think this is a more graphic way to describe what Seth was talking about. We all come from this world. This is an old New Yorker cartoon. Forgive me for revealing my demographic, but this is the way information used to be. This was the view of the world from New York, and that's the way we tend to view information. It's from where we see and where we collect our information out, when actually we're in an information age where now it's possible to zoom out and zoom back in and view information from multiple perspectives. And this is the vision we need to have in mind as we contemplate the public health world of the future. And it's a future where, in alignment, this is sort of a graphic way to think of some of what Seth presented. We're living into a world where data is going to be liquid. All the world that is, all the work that we're toiling in interoperability is to create an environment where applications sit over a pooled set of liquid data. And in this kind of realm, you can imagine how individual data collected at point of care in clinics can flow into the public health realm and be used for surveillance, where surveillance data can flow back into the consumer and to the back to the healthcare provider for their information. To illustrate this, we have enough sites and density in Chicago that we have patients, if you do a scatter map of our patients, we cover the city. And so we can actually take our BMI data and begin to create public health level views. And I just want to highlight again, in our warehouse, since that data is refreshed daily, this kind of map can be refreshed daily. Similarly, if we collect point-of-care data, this is some work that replicates work that was done in New York, where we looked at flu-like symptoms or diagnoses, and you can see that the incidence of the emergence of a flu epidemic comes out most early in this orange line, which is at the clinic level, ahead of other ways that we're surveilling for flu vaccine. So imagine this gorgeous tool that we have now for monitoring STDs. Imagine if that was refreshed real-time daily data coming from individual EMRs. So the last experiment I'll talk about is one that I really want to highlight, groundbreaking concepts from the CDC to illustrate how this could work. Again, we're out of the STD world, but we could easily go back there with applying the same concept. So this particular project focused on foodborne illness. As you know, foodborne illness is episodic, and patients often come to a clinic with those symptoms, and a provider would not top of the list think of a foodborne illness. They would think of, you know, a more common viral illness. So the concept here was that at public health levels where the surveillance is occurring and an epidemic is, or an outbreak, excuse me, is identified, could that be brought to the point of care to alert a clinician to consider foodborne illness? So Ninad actually is the one who could explain this slide more elegantly than I, but basically the concept was that there is an alert repository maintained at the CDC that de-identified appropriate data could be stripped from the EMR, shipped to that repository, analyzed, and an alert sent back to the EMR to alert the physician to be aware. And so these are just some screens that show in these areas the chief complaint, the review of systems, where that data is collected. It's stripped and in the pilot was sent to the EMR, to the CDC repository and returned. And here you see in red an alert which indicated that this cluster of symptoms and the place where the patient is coming from indicates that the provider ought to be alerted to that. And the alert pops up in the real time in the visit at the time of the physical exam, so that the provider can be alerted at the right time to consider that in the flow. So that sort of punches up this concept that Seth is talking about how an information age like this can create a seamless feedback between the clinical setting and the public health arena, where the individual data is feeding the ability to identify patterns of illness, and then those patterns are fed back to the clinical site to alert people to take proper action. So that's That's it. Thanks.